Hello, I'm Brian.
I'm Claire.
And this is the Computer Weekly
Downtime Upload
Podcast. It's just Claire and I this week.
Hi.
Our beloved colleague Caroline is not with us. She'll be back next time. Last week she was in Vegas.
Yep.
At AWS reInvent.
A very popular destination for the tech journos.
And she's still pretty jet lagged from that. So it's just us. Just you and me, Claire.
Yeah.
Not for the first time.
Is it?
No. Think. Christmas Eve 2013.
Oh, those were the days when we had to write about the pardon of Alan Turing.
Alan Turing got his pardon, mm-hmm. Yeah. And there was only two of us working that day.
Are you abandoning me this year?
On Christmas Eve, I think I am.
How could
New Year's
you?
Eve, I should be.
Oh, okay.
I should be around.
We'll just delay our mutual working.
It was quite a challenge, and very annoying that he got his pardon on that day. I was looking forward to a nice, relaxed Christmas Eve.
He'd waited long enough. He could have waited a little bit longer.
I'm not sure he did have much choice in the matter, but I think they had to source a picture or resize a picture, and everybody who knew how to do that stuff.
Yeah.
They weren't there.
They were not. No. So we just had to wing it.
We just had to wing it, just as we're doing now.
I mean, we had to use our professional knowledge of which we have plenty.
I think I said before in the podcast that I thought of one of my Jewish contacts who was an InfoSec guy, because I used to cover security, and he was Danny Dresner. He was not working on Christmas, he was available on Christmas Eve.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so he was able to provide me with a comment, so that was good. And then we got the picture sorted as well, and so on. But we still bear a slight grudge against Alan Turing for having the audacity to get himself pardoned.
When will he receive our pardon?
Caroline was, as I said, in Vegas last week. I just picked a couple of her stories before coming on the podcast, just to flag them.
Mm-hmm.
And we can include the links to these stories in the show notes for the podcast. So, eye-catching one here, AWS CEO Andy Jassy blames significant political interference for Amazon losing the $10 billion Jedi deal.
Oh my goodness.
I'm sure if she was here, she could do justice to that.
Yeah.
And talk us through all the ins and outs of it. Incidentally, I met one of our journalist colleagues from another publication recently who said Caroline Donnelly said she knows more about this stuff than anybody else.
What? She said that she knows more about it than anyone else?
More about AWS, cloud computing, which is a nice testimony for Caroline from someone from a rival publication, after all.
Oh, I thought you were saying our rival claimed that Caroline was going around with a little face saying, I know more about cloud and data centers.
No, she didn't do that. No, this was in their opinion.
I was going to say, that doesn't sound like our Caroline.
Her expertise is acknowledged beyond the confines of Computer Weekly, even.
She's the king of the cloud.
She is, indeed. And the other story that caught my eye was AWS VP of Engineering talking about the cloud giant's first major quantum computing push. And this was a story that Caroline did on the eve of AWS reInvent in Vegas. So we'll include the links to those two stories in the show notes, and listeners can have a good read of those. But
cool.
Today is, as we said, just me and Claire.
Yeah.
So Claire, you understand you were at a sort of judging event recently. Quite close to home for you.
Yeah, so I was at the Waltham Forest Tech Camp. So I think the best way to describe this is that the tech camp, it's like a career camp that skips from borough to borough, and in each borough they submit a borough brief.
Cool, so it's a London thing.
Yeah, it's a London-based thing. Currently they're in 5 boroughs, and they're hoping to go throughout all 33 eventually. But at the minute it's just in a select few. Basically, people in the borough who are either in education or aren't in long-term employment can take part in these tech camps.
Uh-huh.
They have to band together to solve the borough brief,
mm-hmm.
and then give a presentation to a group of judges so that it can be decided who's like the standout idea and the runner-up idea.
And you were one of those judges.
I was one of those judges. But everybody gets an accreditation. So everybody gets sort of like a little thing that they can put on their CV saying that they took part, because there are people that, you know, like go in and help them and give them coaching and they can take part in...
Oh, that's good. Like, because you want to give up all that time, you know, and get nothing out of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that everybody gets something that they can put on their CV to say that they took part.
And the brief was about public safety, is that right?
Yeah, the Walden Forest brief was safer streets. Basically, the local authority, they did a survey, I think, of like almost 2,000 people between 11 and 16. The age of 11 and 16.
Right.
So they surveyed these kids,
uh-huh.
asking about, you know, like the local area and their lives and the opportunities in the area and stuff. I'm going to skip the other percentages, but they found that 45% of young people don't feel safe to go out alone.
Oh, that's a big number, isn't it? Really?
It's like almost half of young people don't feel safe going out alone. So, yeah, the brief was basically, you know,
is
like...
Is it a dangerous area then?
I've never felt unsafe.
You come from that area, more or less, don't you?
Ish, yeah. I used to go shopping in... Mm. So it was like the ceremony, the awards, the judging, took place in Walden Forest College. Like, I think my primary school took us to swimming lessons in this college. And when I was a kid, I used to, like, go shopping in Walthamstow. I don't remember feeling... like I shouldn't have been there. Maybe
with
I'm just in a bubble.
Hands. No.
Am I just in like some little like safety bubble?
Well,
I don't know.
These kids are a wee bit younger than you, so maybe it's generational thing or
maybe,
things have changed.
Maybe it has. I mean, like that's quite a sad and disappointing statistic. But so the borough brief was to come up with a solution for the problem. So you develop a digital business idea, and then you work with employers. Either in the area or in sort of like the greater London area, who can provide mentoring and guidance and like how you could introduce, you know, like technology into the business idea. So it's not necessarily that they have to implement it themselves, but they are given guidance from people who could potentially implement it on like whether it's a feasible idea and how quickly it could get done and what kind of like apps might be good to like partner with if it already does sort of like a similar thing. With the idea that people might come out of it with, you know, like relevant experience and make them sort of more employable. And then also to fulfill the borough brief as well, make streets safer.
And was there a standout? I mean, everyone gets accreditation, but was there one or two projects that you were impressed by as a judge?
So the judges decided on a standout team and a runner-up. So the standout team, it was called City Stomper.
What a cool name.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So the idea behind City Stomper was to stomp out crime in the local area.
Uh-huh.
From what I remember, they were hoping to partner with a third-party app like Waze, for example. So that people could, in real time, sort of log their journey home and how safe it is in real time. So if there was crime, they were hoping that there would be like a stomp button that would contact the police, let's stomp out this crime. And then they were hoping that people could sort of like, you know how if you're on Waze, people update in real time, like whether there's a traffic jam or...
Yeah, it's one of the great things about it, isn't it?
Yeah. So
there's some rubble on the road or something like that.
And then the more people agree with that, the more...
Yeah. It's kind of crowdsourcing.
So I think that the idea was sort of something like that, but for crime and like how to get home in your local area if you're, you know, like walking down the streets and stuff. So that's quite cool. And the runner-up was called Upload. It was a bit of a different one. It was kind of like a community app for people who are suffering from stalking.
Okay.
So if you had a stalker or had experienced any kind of, you know, like stalking behaviour, that you could join a community where you can talk about it and feel a bit safer.
Okay.
So yeah, two very interesting ideas. There were some others as well, like a safe route school bus that would take different schools in different directions home, so that if there's like a problem between two groups of schools that don't get on when they're in the street, they like take them home a different way so they don't encounter each other. It was a very interesting day. There was quite a lot of, you know, like quite a lot of really good ideas.
When you do get the impression, don't you, I suppose, especially this year, that I suppose this might be more South London, but London more generally, that there is a lot of knife crime and stuff like that. So, I mean, these developments do sound, you know, very relevant, very useful.
Yeah, and by people who are in the community as well. So what they think would be helpful.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was quite interesting. Quite eye-opening. Like, the vibe of the day was, like, really cool. Uh-huh. Everyone was, you know, like, really jazzed and quite excited to be there, and all of the presenters were really capable as well.
There was an event last week that we both went to, which is quite a rare thing for us, to, like, two Computer Weekly journalists to go to the same thing.
Yeah.
And that was the opening of Salesforce's Ohana floor in their building.
Yeah.
The Salesforce Tower.
Is it really called the Salesforce Tower now? Is it not called Heron Tower?
Well, I'm not sure of the legality of that, but I think, you know, colloquially it's referred to as the Salesforce Tower. And they were opening this this floor, the Ohana floor, which is rich in all their marketing iconography and stuff. And it can be... can be used for free by not-for-profits and things like that in this area and beyond this area, I suppose. And they have a similar thing in Salesforce Tower, which is called Salesforce Tower, in San Francisco, which is the tallest building in San Francisco. Yeah, so we were both there. The mayor, Sadiq Khan, opened it. There were some religious people there too, giving blessings. And a girl from, I mean, coming back to London School Children, there was a 15-year-old school girl who
From School
spoke.
21.
Yeah.
Was incredible.
She was incredible.
Marika.
Yeah, Marika Rydell from School 21.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's really into Salesforce.
Well, she did work experience there, didn't
17
she?
17 months. Yeah.
Which is quite a long time.
It is quite a long time.
But yeah.
She was very fluent, very articulate.
Mm.
Very passionate about the value that her school gets from the partnership with Salesforce. I mean, as journalists, we're always a bit kind of cynical and sceptical about these things, but I mean, her passion really did shine through, didn't it?
Yeah, I wouldn't have been able to do that at 15. How big is that room? Like 150 people.
And she was quite chilled about it.
Yeah.
During her speech, she kind of lost her way a little bit, but it didn't faze her.
Yeah.
She just came back on track.
Yeah.
She was very impressive. As was Sadiq. I thought Sadiq was very humorous.
He was quite funny.
He was funny, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I wrote that story up, so we'll include that in the,
sounds good.
In the show notes for the podcast.
Yeah.
At the same event, they also took the opportunity to announce some funding.
Yeah.
For a couple of things.
Yeah.
One called the Pathfinder Programme.
That was the one.
And then another one which was about stimulating maths education. But the details of both of those things are in the story.
Yeah, would you look at that?
So go on.
And they're offering, you know, like the space for free in the evenings for not-for-profits as
well. Which I suppose is the upshot of our little discussion about it now. It's just to flag that, yeah. And then they had the mascots there as well, of course. Cody the Bear.
And Astro.
And Astro.
I don't like people in costumes, though.
Yeah, you were very wary of having a photograph taken with them.
Well, they're just... it scares me. I don't know what it is.
Well, it is interesting what you say, though, because the... I mean, as images, those characters are appealing and attractive and stuff.
Mm.
But then maybe when you encounter some poor person who's trapped inside a bear costume...
Yeah, that's blown up. A blow-up bear costume.
Yeah.
Because they were inflated.
Yeah, I mean, I've had my photograph taken with Cody the Bear. I didn't mind it.
Yeah, but... Oh, okay. It's not that I don't want to have my picture taken with the mascots of Salesforce. I'm a big fan of Astro.
You are a big fan of Astro.
I am.
Yeah.
But I don't like it when people are in costume, especially like, you know, those, have you seen those big robot costumes?
No, I've not seen those, but I'm picturing, yes.
They're terrifying, I can't.
Quite disturbing.
It. Yeah.
No, I can imagine. I was also in Birmingham last week.
Yeah, you were.
For the SAP UK and Ireland.
You've been about, haven't you?
Users group, I have been about. And that was my last trip of the year, thankfully. But yeah, it was, as I think I said on the last podcast, when you were doing your judging, the same thing happens every year. So the user group will survey its members,
mm-hmm.
SAP customers who are members of the user group, and they always ask about the latest SAP thing.
Mm.
So that might be Leonardo, which is their name for their, you know, all the cool stuff, machine learning, Internet of Things, artificial intelligence, blah, blah, blah. Or it might be, I think last year was C4HANA, which is the customer side of S4HANA, which is their basic, there's nothing basic about it actually, but it's their ERP system. And you always find that the members of the user group have almost never heard of whatever the new thing is.
Really?
So I was interested this year, as ever, to find out if the latest thing, which is a thing called Qualtrics, it's a company, it's a bit like SurveyMonkey.
Yeah.
But for enterprise, in fact, we use it. We recently here at TechTarget filled in a Qualtrics survey.
Yep.
It's used for surveying employees, but also customers and things like that. And SAP acquired this about a year ago.
Didn't we speak of it?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
$8 billion
yeah.
was the price that SAP paid for this. Actually, very interesting and innovative. I spoke to one of the guy who leads Qualtrics in EMEA, and you know, there's a lot to it. It's more than just a survey tool.
Yeah,
but let's come to the statistics now. So they asked those members, you know, do they see Qualtrics being of benefit to their companies or organizations, because they have public sector as well. Yes was 6%.
Okay.
No clue as to what Qualtrics is, 43%.
Right.
Don't know, need to find out more, 44%. So much the same story, but even more strongly, I think, than in previous conferences. Mm. So $8 billion.
Wow.
Seems like a lot of money to us.
it seems like a lot of money to a lot of people.
I suppose it especially seems like a lot of money if you're an SAP customer and you give SAP quite a lot of money each year and they go and spend $8 billion of it.
Yeah, but have they like managed to rebrand it and bring it all in the stuff that...
Not yet.
Yeah,
not
so...
yet. They're going to dovetail it with SuccessFactors, which is their HR thing.
Eventually people will know. And
their entire customer experience suite, which is based partly around Hybris, kind of big omni-channel software thing.
Yeah.
So I mean, the SAP will in time will get use out of this, and I always think it's a bit like, you know, footballers get more expensive every year. How can that possibly be the case? But you know, the West Coast of the United States. Big money, so maybe in context, it's not such an outrageous thing.
Mm.
Also on the survey this year, Paul Cooper, who's chair of the user group, sat down with him for about an hour or so and talked through various things. And Paul this year introduced a question to the survey about whether users see SAP as a trusted partner.
Right,
and it was about 8-9%. For that
said,
that they saw SAP as a trusted partner, as opposed to just you know how with IT companies, it's either a transactional thing, or they're a strategic partner.
Yeah,
you kind of shape your technology strategy and your business strategy maybe with them.
Yeah.
So they asked that question, and it came out as round about I'm saying 9 or 8%, because they also asked another question with a similar percentage, which was which elicited the response that SAP was becoming less important.
Right.
Which actually is quite a troubling thing.
Yeah, that's
for SAP.
Not great. That's not great.
No. It's not dreadful.
What is that? Do you know what that is in comparison to last year?
This is the first time they've asked this question.
Oh, so they don't know.
They didn't know what they were going to get out of it. So we'll see, you know, what the question response will be like next year.
Mm.
Also on S4 adoption, and for people who don't maybe follow SAP all that closely, about 5 years ago, they came out with a new ERP system
mm-hmm.
called S4HANA.
Yeah.
HANA's their kind of super fast in-memory columnar database. So they redid their ERP to run on HANA
mm-hmm.
as opposed to running on maybe an Oracle database or Microsoft database or whatever.
Sure.
So they had much more control. So that was about 5 years ago. So it seems like, certainly in the UK and Ireland and among this group of users, okay, they're kind of FTSE 250 type companies, so quite big. Not absolutely the biggest enterprises, but quite big.
Mm.
20% of them have declared that they have no intention of moving from. Remember, these are already SAP customers, so they've said they're not going to move to S/4HANA
right. At
all.
Okay.
Which is quite a big percentage of your existing customer base that's not going to buy into your latest, greatest ERP.
Isn't it just going to end up that they'll... Are they not going to try and migrate everyone?
Well, SAP will want to do that.
Yeah, otherwise they're maintaining two things.
But 20% of these customers are saying no, they're not doing it.
They'll just have to go somewhere else.
They'll have to go somewhere else or there's a company called Rimini Street who will kind of help you to maintain what you've got already. So mm-hmm. you don't get any updates or anything, they will just, they'll help you. So that's a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Or shift into another ERP, Microsoft Dynamics, Infor, IFS,
mm-hmm.
Epicor, NetSuite, I mean there's lots to, Oracle.
Yeah, but any move is...
deeply traumatic.
Yeah.
So we shall see. The existing ERP is a thing called ECC6, and that runs out of support in 2025.
That seems really far away.
It does seem really far away.
but it's not.
But it's not really. They originally declared this in 2015, so they gave them 10 years' notice.
Right.
But even so...
I don't know. Even if you give someone 10 years notice, they sort of think like, oh, I've got 10 years to sort that out.
And apparently, because Paul was telling me that some of his members are saying to him, oh, they'll put it off, you know.
Yeah.
But that's a bit of a game of chicken, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, who's gonna blink first? The other thing Paul was saying, which is quite interesting, I think, is partners. So when you do something like an SAP project, you don't do it yourself, all by yourself.
Mm.
Right? You get a partner to help you do it, whether it's at the top end Accenture or one of the various resellers of SAP that exists.
Yeah, that's quite common.
Yeah, it's very common. But the partners are saying, we don't have enough resource to get everyone over by 2025.
Oh, dear.
And what will they do? They'll put up their prices as well, won't they?
Yeah.
So yeah, altogether it's... but there is progress of a sort.
Yeah, I was going to say, this all sounds quite dismal.
So, yeah, it does sound quite dismal. I don't think SAP were all that pleased. But it's a complex thing. And there are customers who are using S4 and are therefore taking advantage of all the whizzy speed of HANA, which is a super fast database.
Okay.
So... you know, and they've still got all those customers on ECC. I spoke to a few customers as well about what they're doing as opposed to SAP stuff.
Who did you talk to? Can you say?
pick out a couple of them.
Yeah.
There's one called QD Stores, okay. Case study. I've written that one up.
Not heard of them.
No, I hadn't heard of them either. They're a discount store.
Okay.
Mostly based in East Anglia.
Oh.
And they have a number of stores. Can't remember how many. I think it's 47, but it will be in the piece.
Hmm.
But I quite liked that wee interview because the guy I did it with, it was the first time he'd ever spoken to a journalist.
Oh, that was a good.
Simon Bacon. And he was very kind of candid and open. And they're not sure about moving to S/4HANA. They might, and again, they might not, but they might. But they've got a kind of, they put something in place that will be, that will enable them to get more out of their ECC 6 installation.
Okay.
And they've really involved their users. They've done design thinking workshops with users to just make it more usable, basically, so they can get more out of it.
Yeah.
I did another interview with a gentleman called John Mahone, who's effectively IT director of Jazz Pharmaceuticals, which the interesting thing, and that was an S4 migration, by the way, so it is happening.
Okay.
But the interesting thing about that was the way he described the project. So they had this philosophy that there would be no casualties.
Right.
So quite often something like these kind of big migrations are very stressful.
Yeah.
People burn out. They never want to see the letters SAP ever again. Because it's so stressful and it's very deadlined and you're working long hours and it takes a long time and marriages break up and it's just awful.
Yeah.
So they didn't want that. And in order to avoid that, they had mindfulness sessions.
Okay.
They put a lot of attention onto people's diets, make sure they're eating well.
Right.
Lots of exercise sessions and a real kind of bonding of the team. And actually the way he spoke about it, I'm not really doing justice to it.
Yeah.
Only he could do justice to it, really. But it did sound like a cool project that was really well executed, and all the people that they drew into the project from around the company, because it was a business thing, really, as well as an IT thing, they've not had any casualties.
But who's paying for all that? Because...
You mean the extra stuff, the coaching and the...
Yeah.
They just funded out of the project funds. They just thought it was very important. And I guess, do these things, are they all that expensive to get a mindfulness coach out?
It depends.
We did some of that internally, didn't we? We had... 10-minute breaks and stuff.
Yeah, I'm trying to make that happen again. But that's a story for another time. It depends how... So you said that they were trying to make sure that they ate well and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, what is that? Leaflets? Are they getting a dietitian in? Are they giving them fruit?
They had a dietitian. They had a... I can't remember the gentleman's name or the company's name, but they had a... They're based in Dublin.
Like a third party.
They're based in Dublin, and they got a firm that does sports psychology type training for like the Irish rugby team and things like that. So they did get people like that in to help out with the diet side of things.
And does that all just stop once the project's finished?
I think they're embedding. I think they're gonna try and carry forward some of these activities.
Okay, good.
I thought it sounded really good.
It does sound really good, but my cynicism obviously got the better of me.
So that was the SAP user group in Birmingham, my last conference of the year. I can now start to think about 2020.
Was that in the NEC?
That was in the ICC.
Oh, okay, so you actually got to go to Birmingham rather than just the airport.
Yeah. And it was very Christmassy, the Christmas market.
Yeah.
It's quite a big
I was
thing
there recently as well, and everything's all jazzed up.
So this will be our last podcast before the election. I wanted to flag, for the benefit of our readers, our colleague Sebastian Klovig-Skelton's compendious analysis of all the manifestos.
He's done so a really good
Seb
job.
Has done a very good job in teasing out all the technology elements of the main British political parties. I say that because actually the DUP isn't mentioned and Sinn Féin isn't mentioned either, so it's the main UK mainland parties, He's looked at all their manifestos. It's well worth looking at if you want a kind of, you don't want to have to go to the bother of reading the manifestos, and you just want, well, what's the technology like? So that's that piece. One of the interesting things about it, I thought, was the way Seb did it was actually all the main parties have quite a lot in common when it comes to technology.
Really.
Yeah, they all, they've all made commitments to, I'm just taking this from Seb, to protect the environment. So the climate change is a big theme of all the manifestos, especially the Labour Party one, and of course the Green one. But one of the interesting things that Seb did with this piece was he did find some holes in the manifestos, where none of the manifestos, in his view, and he was being quite authorial here, and actually what was one of the things was the environment, because, and this is directly from Seb's piece, despite their commitments to electric vehicles, he writes, none of the manifestos comment on the sustainability of increasing electric vehicle production, which relies heavily on the extraction of lithium. Okay, it's one of the main components needed for electric car batteries, which I thought was an interesting thing, because we all think electric vehicles are part of the answer, and indeed other people. It's not just his own opinion, but
Electric vehicles, you charge them though, don't you?
Yeah.
So it depends what makes the electricity. So unless you're carbon neutral already, as a country, you're going to be charging your vehicles with dirty power anyway. Yeah. Like, I don't know. People throw around these buzzwords. I think Seb's right, you know. Everyone's throwing around this electric vehicle buzzword, and then the general public are so bombarded.
And in his piece,
moving on.
Seb really drills into the whole question of the usage of lithium. So he's got quite a bit of detail on that.
I'm looking forward to reading this.
And Seb does a very similar thing with technology that's used for like the military and so on and so forth. And he makes the point that apropos the Labour and SNP commitments about immediately suspending arms sales to human rights violators.
Right.
There is no mention, even so, of any of the manifestos of suspending the sale of surveillance technologies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another kind of gap that he's picked up on. So vote Seb.
Yeah. Seb for Prime Minister. What will we call his party? The Independent Seb Party.
The Seb Party, yeah.
This is very... Yeah, I would definitely recommend our readers read this piece. It's a really, really in-depth look.
And it's really useful.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, apart from what I've said about him pointing out certain gaps, it does give a very straightforward descriptive account of the technology elements and all of the manifestos.
Mm. It's basically like a manifesto is too long, didn't read. Here's everything you need to know about technology.
Yeah. Although we should probably alert readers to the fact that it's not a quick read.
Neither are the manifestos, though.
Well, we're also recording on the eve of the Press Gazette British Journalism Awards.
Hell yeah.
And Seb and Bill Goodwin, along with Duncan Campbell, they're shortlisted in the technology category for those awards.
And rightly so.
And that's for the Facebook stories that we've devoted a couple of podcasts to.
Yeah.
It's a big deal. I mean, our boys are up against the FT twice.
Yep.
The BBC, ITV and The Guardian.
Yep.
So they may not win.
It doesn't matter if they do. It's a massive recognition.
It's a massive recognition.
And they deserve it, like, so much.
And more importantly, as Caroline has said, win or lose, we booze.
Yeah, win or lose, we booze. Maybe that should be Seb's top line manifesto statement for the Independent Seb Party.
And that reminds me that, speaking of booze, The next podcast will be our Christmas special.
Yeah.
Now, there's no point in us being, as we would say in Glasgow, completely stoicious. So what would you say in Essex for someone who's paralytically drunk?
Oh, I don't know. Like, oh my God. Like, she was bladdered.
Bladdered?
I don't know. All of the words.
Anyway, we're not going to be that. But we'll be quite merry. And the idea of the podcast, the Christmas special podcast, is the same as our summer special podcast, which is to basically point out some gems in the podcast for our listeners to go back and have a listen to, maybe, and also to point out what some of the things stuff we're going to be doing next year.
Mm-hmm.
On this occasion, this is all we have time for. Just remains for me to say thank you very much to Claire.
Anytime.
And thank you to you for listening, and we'll be back next week with Caroline. Bye-bye.
Bye.